Reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 8, Texts 8 through 10. What's special about Chapter 8? What's like the prayers of Queen Quinti? So before we're reading the section, before the prayers of Queen Quinti begin, and the scene is that from chapter 7, which is the son of Drona punished. Son of Drona is Ashvatthama, Ashvatthama. In chapter 7, had killed the sleeping sons of the Pandavas. Arjuna pursued him, caught him, brought him back before Draupadi, and then this intense exchange about what to do. And he was spared. He says life was spared, but he was humiliated and dismissed. And the battle is nearly finished. Finished, but in one sense not officially finished, in the sense that the purpose of the battle was to install Maharaj Yudhishthira as the king, and so the beginning of chapter 8 is those descriptions and it. Sutta describing that everything that happened was just and fair. The wicked Duryodhan and those supporting him were finished. And so many persons had died, just as Arjuna was concerned would happen. And Maharaj Yudhishthira was concerned would happen. Sure enough, it happened. So the funeral ceremony was arranged, which, and Krishna personally spoke transcendental knowledge to relieve the grief of the surviving family members and to accomplish many reasons. Three Ashvamedha yajnas were performed. There was no sin, but if there was some idea of sin, that removal of the taint of sin by the performance of Ashvamedha Yajna. Three of them were performed. Krishna personally helped oversee, and the glory of Maharaj Yudhishthira spread equal to that of the King of Heaven. So where I ended previously was, that's all done, and now Krishna is preparing to leave. He came from Dwarka for a specific purpose. The specific purpose has been fulfilled, and now he's going to leave. He was worshipped by the great brahmanas and sages. He in turn offered worship unto them. So in his role as the personality of God, he received worship. In his Leela, as a Kshatriya, he worshipped the Brahmanas. So all the formalities were done, but the loving exchanges, which were the essence of those formalities, had been completed, and now Krishna is on his chariot, ready to leave. So there's three events that happen, three interruptions for Krishna's leaving take place. One is Uttara, another is Queen Kunti, another is Maharaj Yudhishthira. Because Nobody wants to see Krishna go. They all want to see Krishna stay. Only this first one is a calamity situation. Text 8. As soon as he seated himself on the chariot to start for Dwarka, he saw Uttara hurrying toward him in fear. Bhaya Vivalam, Uttaram Bhaya Vivalam. He was very afraid. And what was the nature of her fear? Uttara said, O Lord of Lords, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics, protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. There was a Brahmastra number 2 that was released by Ashvatthama after having killed the sons of the Pandavas. The grandson of the Pandavas was the remaining heir to the Pandava dynasty, and Ashvatthama was attempting to kill that remaining heir of the Pandava dynasty. So the lineage would be broken. Not only killing the sons in their sleep, killing the embryo of the womb with his Brahmastra weapon this time. So Prabhupada chooses to focus on the nature of dependence upon the Lord by a devotee. Although the devotee may be very qualified to defend themselves, protect themselves. The devotee doesn't feel independently strong or independently equipped. They feel dependent. So that's true in the positive sense too, the execution of some duty. We have some ability or some strength or some talent or some intelligence or something. And the devotee is feeling by nature, feeling dependent upon the Lord to execute whatever service, whatever duty properly. The fear is the fear of illusion, the fear of duality, the fear of forgetting Krishna, because duality and illusion cover our remembrance of Krishna, cover our Krishna consciousness. How powerful were the Pandavas? They showed what their prowess was. But because of their devotion, they were never thinking independent. The Lord was their sole protector. In Padma Purana, there's 6 items of surrender, and this is one of them. One feels oneself always and exclusively protected by the Lord. And when calamity arises, or when things are not calamitous, just going along every day, then on the other end, when there's some great fortune that comes. So duality shows these, you know, hot and cold and fortunate, unfortunate, and good and bad. And in all circumstances, the devotee is feeling dependent. And that connection through dependency takes them beyond duality. So when some feature of duality comes, they may exhibit a behavior that looks like other than what it is, but if real dependence is real dependence, not just circumstantial. And Prabhupada shares. What does how does a parent feel towards a child that's very affectionate, very dependent, very loving? A show of affection, even more than they might otherwise ordinarily, although they feel affection. That's very special. So because of the devotee's regard for Krishna like that, Krishna reciprocates like that. Here comes Uchra weaving her way through. One can only imagine what an assembly there must have been. Krishna's on his chariot in a public square and ready to go, and through the crowd of people comes Uchra weaving her way, and Krishna, Pahi Pahi Maha Yogin Deva Deva Jagatpate. So it's very natural for a devotee to seek Krishna's protection when there's some danger and difficulty. Why is that? Krishna is their only shelter. Krishna is their controller. Krishna is their master. So what does the dependent do when there's some situation? They go to the master. It's just very natural. In the purport, Prabhupada chooses to speak about duality and absolute. The material side is filled with duality, and in the materials and spiritual side, there's the absence of duality. Because of duality, there's difficulty and there's ignorance and there's illusion and there's fear and there's enviousness, and that's part of the feature of duality. He writes, in contrast, the world of the duality is composed of matter and spirit, whereas the absolute world is complete spirit without any tinge of material qualities. Again, the contrast. In the dual world, everyone is falsely trying to become the master of the world. Whereas in the absolute realm, the Lord is the absolute Lord, and all others are his absolute servitors. In the material world of duality, everyone is envious of all others. This is one of these six enemy items. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Mohamada, and Matsarya. Matsarya is enviousness. And in that enviousness, it's vicious. There's competition. Because it looks like not only competition for who's going to win, but who's going to survive. And who's going to be extinguished. Looks like that. Souls aren't extinguished. And the whole idea of winning and losing is illusion from the get-go, because it has nothing to do with us. And death is inevitable due to, what's the reason? The dual existence of matter and spirit. But in the spiritual realm, there's deathlessness. Souls don't come into being or go out of being. So there's deathlessness and there's fearlessness. In the spiritual conception, the spiritual realm of that which is absolute. So now we have devotees who are here in the realm of where things are, there's duality and there's matter and there's spirit and there's seemingly favorable and unfavorable. So a devotee like Uttara can enter into the realm of fearlessness or the realm of the absolutes. Prabhupada writes, one cannot save himself from the cruel hands of death in the material world without having surrendered himself at the lotus feet of the Lord. So what does that mean? Does it mean that you surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord and you won't die? Because if we're speaking of the soul, for the non-devotee, the soul doesn't die. For the devotee, the soul doesn't die. For the non-devotee, the body dies. For the devotee, the body dies. So what's the special deal? One cannot save himself from the cruel hands of death in the material world without having surrendered himself unto the lotus feet of the Lord. So what does this surrender have to do with deathlessness? It's not in the apparent longevity of the body, but the understanding is that one can enter into the realm of deathlessness or the realm of absolute, because here there's matter and spirit. Where there's no matter and spirit, one can enter into that realm of the absolute now, even while surrounded by duality, by taking full shelter of the Lord and Master of duality. There's duality and there's the Lord and Master of duality. The devotee knows he's the master of duality. Whatever configuration of matter there is, he's the Lord of that. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. I take shelter of him. The act of surrender is fully spiritual and the outcome is fully spiritual. One is in touch with the absolute. So this is what Utra is doing. She's taking shelter. And she, of whom? Not just somebody who's strong. You know, her relative who's like a big guy. Hey, do something. You're rich. You're well connected. You've got lots of pulse with people. You can do something. You're very clever. Figure something out. But he's not any of those. He's the master. He's the Lord of Lords. The shelter of fearlessness. He himself is fearlessness, and one who takes shelter of him finds the shelter of fearlessness. O my Lord, you are all powerful. The fiery arrow is coming towards me fast. My Lord, let it burn me personally if you so desire, but please do not let it burn and abort my embryo. Please do me this favor, my Lord. So devotees aren't supposed to ask for things, right? Prabhupada explains, for oneself, one doesn't ask for things. Although, you know, in mixed devotion, one may ask for things. But in pure devotion, one doesn't ask for oneself, but rather for the sake of one's service. The devotee is fully dependent upon the Lord for their service. So this is the distinction. She's not asking for herself. She's saying, if you so desire, if you feel that that's appropriate, then let this brahmastra kill me. That's okay. It's not for myself, but my service. That my service is to protect this child. So it's it fits well within the theme of the first canto, that of giving, of protecting Brahminical culture and cows and women and children and elderly. It's a strain or a refrain throughout this first canto. These five must be protected. That's an item of Vedic culture. So she understands this is, I'm entrusted with this specific service to protect this child. In ordinary circumstances, ordinary conditioned souls are attached. Not just, it's my duty to protect the child. It's attachment on the platform of the body, like that devotee was speaking of yesterday, or the first time guest that came, of having some idea of devotion to God or to Krishna, and having some idea of attachment and affection and affinity for family, spirit, matter. So, the Bhagavatam, in this case and many other places, is training us through examples of great devotees to move to the spirit side, be attached to Sat, and by attachment to Sat, be detached from Asat. So, just like the discussion yesterday, just repeat it and expand it a little bit. There's when we speak of duty, that's some service for us. We have some service to do for Krishna. That's a duty. Mm-hmm. And so the mood of the servant is not to be the enjoyer of the outcome. The influence of passion is I'm entitled to enjoy the outcome. And duty, this is just goodness now, it's not transcendence. In goodness, I'm entitled to my duty, but not to be the enjoyer of the fruit of the duty. Karma nivadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. I'm not entitled to be the enjoyer of the fruit of my duty. I'm entitled to perform my duty. That's goodness. And mood of service goes beyond duty. It's the reason for this is not just so that I'm situated in goodness and detached from the entanglement of my work, but that Krishna should be pleased. And how do I know that Krishna should be pleased, that Krishna will be pleased? Through scripture and through the indication of the representative of Krishna. When the representative of Krishna lets us know Krishna is pleased, and Krishna is pleased. Plus, we also feel pleasure. But through the confirmation of the representatives of Krishna. So just to keep the language simple, it's pleasing Guru and Krishna. That's service mood. Whatever we do, even the mixing of matter and spirit duties that we do. The social, the work, the family, the anything, civic, what we do. Service mood for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. Without the attachment to the result, but attachment to Guru and Krishna. And the other, I'm just expanding an answer I gave yesterday. Another is being in the spiritual conception. Like, the soul. Instead of the body. Or service because service is it's serving the eternal. That aspect of life which is unchanging. The soul and God and the soul's relation with God, and I want to serve that. Not just, let's go the other way, not just circumstantially because this soul and this body is related to my body and therefore I want to serve them. Certainly there should be some due amount of service for those who were closely related to. but not created by the circumstance of proximity or juxtaposition of this body, that body. And then when that changes, oh, then there'll be lament because I'm attached to this body, that body arrangement. Focused on that which is eternal, sat. And for what reason? Not just so that I can be good and be detached, but for a higher reason, for this is the service mood again, but for the pleasure of Krishna. To achieve the happiness of Krishna, to enhance the happiness of Krishna. To please Krishna by my existence. So, those two, the service mood and the spiritual conception, they elevate one beyond duality, even we're in the sea of duality. Any direction you look, it's the sea of duality. There's no land in sight. No shelter. But there's shelter. in approaching Krishna's lotus feet. But I always see it as the sea of duality. Where's Krishna's lotus feet? So we can find that shelter, Krishna's lotus feet, through these mood of service. And taking the assist of the spiritual conceptions that are provided by the scriptures and take shelter there. Like Krishna says, one can easily cross over the ocean of material existence by being situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge. Same idea. So we all have some duties. And our duties should be done in that way. We're dependent upon Krishna for the carrying out of our duties. If our power of locomotion is taken away, we can't move. If our power of breathing is taken away, we can't breathe, etc. We're completely dependent to carry out our duties. So rather than taking those gifts for granted, we can acknowledge Krishna's giving me some all facility, whatever service I can do, Krishna's giving that facility. So with a sense of dependence and gratitude, we carry out our duties, and then we stay in Krishna consciousness, in a serving mood. And then, so then these three phases, calamity, neutral, great fortune, and we're staying fixed in sat, in all those phases of time and circumstance. Mood of service should not be generated by circumstance, but generated from the soul on the platform of this is my position, servant of Krishna. Then I have this duty and I have that duty, so I do my duty and I don't do another's duty, just like Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Because this is a duty that's been given to me, and here's the circumstance, so now I apply myself to the circumstance, but not because of the circumstance I apply myself, I apply myself because I'm a servant. And calamities are great, at least as far as opportunity for deepening our dependence upon Krishna, shelter taking in Krishna. So it's not wrong, say in reverse, it's right to depend upon Krishna for our service. And here Uttara is showing, she's praying to Krishna to assist her to carry out her service properly, and there's this big problem heading her way as a fiery iron arrow that's going to kill the child in her womb, and she's meant to protect the child. So Krishna, please, you are all powerful, so we'll carry on actually to text 11. What does Krishna do? Well, the Pandavas, all five of them have grabbed their arrows and they're, but it's not fast enough because this Brahmastra is coming. So Krishna calls the Sudarshan Chakra and destroys the Brahmastra weapon, because Brahmastra is invincible. We learned that from chapter 7. When Ashwatthama fired this invincible weapon, it's invincible. And he didn't know how to retract it. So the solution that Krishna gave was, Arjuna, you know how to fire Brahmastra and retract it. So fire your Brahmastra and retract it, and with it, when you retract it, you'll retract that Brahmastra too. And it worked. So now they're getting ready to, you know, counter Brahmastra, and it's not fast enough. So Krishna releases his Sudarshan Chakra, because invincible means by material law, and Krishna is above material law. And he's so above material law that, at least the way the Prabhupada has explained it here, he's breaking his own promise. His promise was that in the matter of this battle between the Kauravas and the Pandavas, he wouldn't fight. Of course, in one sense, the battle's over, and now it's like post-battle circumstance. But so he's got this, I won't fight, I won't use any weapons. And then another promise, I'll protect my devotee. So there's two promises that clash. What to do? It's easy for Krishna, the protecting of his devotee. Because he's Bhakta Vatsala. And that's the most prominent feature of Krishna. He is most prominently Bhakta Vatsala. Very kind, very affectionate to his devotee. And the devotees come to know that because they're devotees, and non-devotees don't come to know that because they're envious. They're just like, it's unfortunate. They could know it too, but they don't know it. So actually, this takes us all the way to text 13. Text 11, Suta Goswami said, having patiently heard her words, Lord Sri Krishna, who was always very affectionate to his devotees, Bhakta Vatsala, could at once understand that Ashwatthama, the son of Dronacharya, had thrown the Brahmastra to finish the last life of the Pandava family. It was purposeful. Oh, foremost of great thinkers, Shonaka, seeing the glaring Brahmastra proceeding towards them, the Pandavas took up their five respective weapons. The Almighty Personality Godhead Sri Krishna, having observed that a great danger was befalling his unalloyed devotees who were fully surrendered souls, he at once took up the Sudarshan Chakra to protect them. The Pandavas are described as Ananya Vishayatmana. Ananya means exclusive. Anya and Ananya. And Vishayatmana. They don't know any other protection. They don't know any other means to do anything. That's like they don't have to think about it. It's just their nature. Although they're fully qualified, they don't know anything else but Krishna. And that's their qualification. Because they have that qualification, Krishna supplies them everything, because they can use it properly. People that can't use things properly, you don't give them things. Or they earn some piety, so they get some things, and then it's not sufficient piety and not sufficient purity, so they misuse it. It's called America. And now it's becoming the world, where piety brings something, and Kali Yuga influences, and that something gets used in a bad way. And they give it a name, modernity. Then they give it, they don't like that, so they give it another name, post-modernity. Hare Krishna. Without shelter of Krishna, it's all a variety of uselessness and danger. Okay, any discussion?
I had a few questions actually. I'll ask maybe one moment if I get a chance.
Speak up a little bit. I heard what you said, but speak up because.
My first question is related to what I also heard in the Japa retreat, that the third step of increasing the concentration of the mind was to
fervently call out.
Yeah, call out with fervent appeal. So I can see that related to taking shelter of Krishna or in that dependent mood. So that was one of my challenges when I was doing my chanting, that that third step was completely missing. Like, that kind of fervent appeal was not there. So I want to know how to really stimulate that kind of...
A very easy answer. Too easy, too so easy is not satisfying. Going back to the language of the Japa retreat, when there's alignment, it's easy. When the mind is brought to the position of being fixed, feelings are there. And subset or part two of that is, supposing the mind isn't cooperating, then there's some feelings connected to that. Like, I'm feeling kind of disqualified. There's a feeling. So stay with that feeling. Don't like tuck it under the rug. Come before Krishna with that feeling. Feelingly offer your feelings to Krishna. With that, then the desire to connect with Krishna in a positive feeling way becomes stronger. Something else? Yes?
Maharaj, the more we, more I'm hearing about the sense of dependence, the more I'm feeling how far and how far away I am from, you know, dependent arrangements provided by the spiritual master. So there is, at the same time, there is this reality of beginning to understand from the spiritual platform of what is this real dependence on primary relationships. So there's this sense of overwhelmness in me where...
A sense of which?
Overwhelmed.
Feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah.
That's a nice feeling. Okay.
Where like looking back, like how much time it has taken, where I have just, you know, like thrown a perimeter out, you know, taking, in the name of taking shelter on those relationships, at the same time, wanting to come to that stage, you know, where I would really take it in the spiritual conception, so that awareness is there.
That's good. Now what? What's your question? What to do? What's the next step?
So sometimes I end up in, being... Of course, this regret is there, you know, not being able to do that, but going to that...
lamentation?
Not exactly lamentation, but... more of guilt, and I just get stuck in that space.
Okay. So it's a what to do question. Okay. Guilt is not nurturing. Healthy things don't grow out of guilt. Unhealthy things grow out of guilt. So, rather direct your attention to faith in the process. So, you know, let's say there's a group of children, and out of the group of children, some seem to be more mature, and some seems to be less mature and more slow in their maturing. So say you're the teacher and you've got a group of children in your care, and you just reciprocate, you interact differently with the mature, the intermediate, and the slower. You don't like, oh, I like you because you're mature, and you're slower, I don't like you. If you're a genuine teacher, you don't have that kind of disposition. So how does Krishna regard us? How do we regard Krishna? So if I recognize I'm a slow learner, I'm slow in my reading skills. I'm good in math, I'm good in science, I'm slow in my reading skills. What do? Spend some more time in your reading skills. You get a reading skill tutor and work on it. And if the teacher sees, look at this student, they know where their strengths are, and they're going out of their way to get some reading skill and really practicing. And so it's, you know, it's satisfying to the teacher because here's a very sincere student. It's not how quickly they've learned. Say the same thing in a different way, a phrase that is like a standard one for me, my personal perspective is, what's important is not where is one's position on spiritual trajectory, but how are they acting within that relationship, wherever they are, according to their position. They're acknowledging and acting within that relationship of the relationship with Guru and Krishna. That's what's important. And the speed of acceleration is not, it's not an issue. It's a non-issue. Because for sure, healthy growth will continue. For sure. And that's from the teacher's perspective, and the same should be there from the student's perspective. I just stay in this relationship. However, you know, wherever in the trajectory of my spiritual development I happen to be. And in that trajectory of spiritual development, there's going to be some little hills and some little valleys. And that's just part of the landscape. The teacher knows that. Okay, so let me not be motivated by guilt, let me be motivated by the relationship. That's wholesome. And the other, whatever it is that grows, is unwholesome. But then I'll either get stuck in guilt, or, you know, get beyond the shortcoming and then not have any inspiration anymore. It's not based upon the relationship, it's based upon guilt. The guilt's gone, so I become complacent again. That's the wrong reason.
Guru Maharaj, in the recent Gitanagari retreat on the 64 round day, one of the realizations that I received was that I don't really understand the position of a servant, and it was very strong. And so I was wondering if you could kindly speak more about this position of a servant.
I thought I just did that. It's just who we are. It's not something cosmetic that you put on and take off. It makes us look good, feel good about ourselves. It's who we are. Constitutional, primordial, fundamental, unchanging. It's who we are. So, to get to who we are, it's like the example yesterday of the polished diamond. I was thinking some more about that. It's a nice question. Because for the most part, what people do is, it's the half-polished or, you know, slightly polished, and think, that's it. And that's not it. So, just keep going. Because when you could say, when you have that realization in fullness, you have God realization in fullness too. Because Krishna is realized through the medium of devotional service. So there's some realization of Krishna and some realization of myself as his servant. I haven't fully realized Krishna yet. I haven't fully realized my position as a servant yet. Keep going. And one of the ways that we spoke about already is where it's not created by circumstance. In this circumstance, I feel myself dependent and the servant. But when I'm at the job, I don't feel like that. And when I'm with my husband or wife, I don't feel like that. You know, when I got my hand in my bead bag, I'm trying to feel like that. You know, we have to, the rest of our life has to be a constitution in servant of Krishna. All circumstances. Not created by the circumstances, created by our constitutional, fundamental, from the soul itself. That's who we are. Not only a humble Brahmasmi, but what do souls do? They serve Krishna. So we've got all these other upadis that says, oh, I'm an enjoyer over here. I'm a controller over there. I'm really learned at something over there, and so that's who I am. That's what I do. Because that's, you know, so it's coverings of the soul. just proceed with the process. And most powerful, most effective of all is this one activity of chanting the holy name. In addition, you know, the running parallel with that is the scriptural teaching, letting it enter the heart and cleanse. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. That's our sadhana. To reach sadhya, be patient. Have faith. Continue. Something else? Okay, your second question.
Guruji, I was trying to understand the position of fearlessness, because from Uttara's standpoint, she was also like kind of fearful.
He was fearful.
Like externally, like all the.
But Krishna is the shelter of fearlessness, and so she took shelter of
Krishna. So she was also like taking shelter of Krishna in a kind of fearful way. So I'm not able to understand the quality of fearlessness.
Well, it's like Queen Kunti saying to Krishna, please remove the affection that I have for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. Let me get to that completely spiritual position. Like that. And her fear is for the child in the womb, her duty as the mother. I can't do my duty properly. Here's this. You know, ordinary circumstances, I'm dependent upon you. This circumstance, I'm absolutely dependent upon you. There's nothing that's going to stop this from master except you. And my duty is being interfered. I'm fearful of not being able to do my duty, please. Now, that's in the pure state, and there's the mixed. So one can look at it either way. Coming to the pure state. Krishna is the shelter of fearlessness. Okay, thank you very much.